This is from Monday, September 23rd, 2024. Murder and other violent crime dropped across the U.S. last year, FBI data shows. Murder dropped 11.6% from 2022 to 2023, the largest single-year decline in the last 20 years. Property crime was also down overall, while motor vehicle theft and shoplifting rose. Crime, including serious violent incidents like murder and rape, dropped nationally from 22 to 23, according to new data released by the FBI on Monday. Violent crime was down about 3% from 2022 to 2023, and property crime took a similar drop of 2.4%, the FBI reported in its annual Summary of Crime in the Nation. The most serious crimes went down significantly. Murder and non-negligent manslaughter were down an estimated 11.6%, the largest single-year decline in two decades, while rape decreased by an estimated 9.4%. Preliminary numbers showed that 2024 crime numbers were also dropping for the early part of this year, continuing a trend of easing crime as the U.S. has come out of the pandemic. Among property crimes, burglary decreased by an estimated 7.6%. Motor vehicle theft, however, was up by an estimated 12.6% between 2022 and 2023. Recorded incidents of shoplifting were also up, from 999,394 in 2022 to 1,149,336 in 2023, which is roughly the same level of incidents reported in 2019 before the pandemic. And also the first time in years I've read numbers that big out loud. Store closures and COVID-19 security measures likely decreased shoplifting in 2020 and 2021 and may have affected 2022 incidents as well. Public perception of crime is often out of step with the facts, especially in the age of social media, ease of digital communications between neighbors and doorbell cameras, when Americans may be more aware of individual crimes than they would have been in the past. But the violent crime rate dropped from 2022 to 2023, from 377.1 violent crimes per 100,000 people in 22 to 363.8 violent crimes per 100,000 people in 23, the new FBI data shows. During a campaign stop in Kittenning, Pennsylvania on Monday evening, former Prez Donald J. Trump, had a different take on the numbers, claiming crime was through the roof. "Only a stupid person would say crime has gone down," Trump said. "You don't have to know anything about numbers, like how to read them. If you live
sometimes they're so big.
They're just so big.
There's so many of them.
A big integer.
I mean, the one has a bunch of nines, and then the one has a one, but it's higher than the one with all the nines in it.
He does love saying billions these days. Okay, if you live in this country, you know crime has gone up. As part of his 2024 campaign, Trump has tried to spread the notion that the United States is undergoing a crime wave, and he called the FBI's prior numbers a fraud during his debate with VP Kamala Harris, saying that some cities were included, like San Francisco 18 times or something. But the FBI factors in the information gaps into their estimates. The Bureau noted that its 2023 data included full-year numbers from every city agency covering a population of 1 million or more inhabitants. Overall, the FBI's National Incident-Based Reporting System collected information from 700 additional agencies in 2023 compared to 2022. The total population covered by the report is more than 315 million people, or 94.3% of the country. President Joseph Robinette Biden issued a statement Monday saying that FBI numbers confirm that Americans are safer than when we took office, adding violent crime was near a 50-year low. "None of this happened by accident. VP Harris and I have invested in public safety and took action to stop the illegal flow of guns into our communities. Our American Rescue Plan, which every Republican in Congress voted against, helped deliver over $15 billion in public safety funding that enabled over 1,000 state, city, and county governments to avoid cuts to police budgets, invest in community violence interventions, and take other essential steps to keep communities safe," Biden said.
Yeah, so when I feel like coming up, you're going to hear stuff about how we can't fill these jobs. Nobody wants to be a cop because can't beat people up anymore. Let's put that in a context. Oh, baby, it's no possible to leave in a lie, to leave in a lie. I guess it's not logical to say so right. In the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast, I'm Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker Podcast. welcome. Today, it's just a it's an executive committee, and since we have to give a reason for going to an executive committee, I'll give a reason.
Wait, but why are we recording this?
Oops. this is Doug's recording of the executive committee. Bill, thanks for coming.
Anytime.
And of course, Carl is here as almost always. So, first of all, and this is relevant to the topic, the first topic, I have a bone to pick with Carl. Because the topic kind of is, like, there was a couple of things that came out last week in the discussion with Jordan Pusey and Carl and Jason Scott about what the primary results could mean based on the big wins that some insurgents had and leadership being beaten and all of the other things that we talked about. But we didn't really get into a deep dive because, you know, it was a little freewheeling. And so Carl did have his work cut out for him. Fair enough. That's fair. He did. But before the episode came out, while he was producing it, he was throwing around things like, as I saw the beer cans start to pile up, I knew it was going to be bad. Now, first of all, let's get the one thing straight. Sometimes beer cans pile up in here. People smoke big, you know, burn one down, all that stuff. And it's fine. Hanif and I do it. Do you ever have to really do it with Hanif that much? No. Right? Bill and I burn them down in here. You know, never have to do it. So, let's not blame our friend beer on that. Are you sticking with your original?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, cuz Carl had to go home, he had to splice all that tape and then tape it back together because that was a heavily redacted episode.
That was a hugely redacted episode.
Which I think I'm certain it needed to be.
We had nearly 2 hours of footage.
yeah. I mean, look, again, I'm not saying that it was what you're saying it was. It was a difficult post-production. But I think it wasn't drinking necessarily.
I mean, that anytime I have to edit for more than 4 hours, usually drinking is involved.
Yeah, but you're looking at it in the reverse way. It's like, we can drink all the time here, and it just so happens that. It's like saying weed smoking was involved when something happened in here. I'm like, there's always weed smoking involved. I don't know. I got a bug up my ass about this. I don't know why. It was literally, I think you sent that message to like six people. Just had a bug up my ass. It wasn't even beer. Whatever. It's fucking Jordan brought like fucking Michelob Ultra Apple or something. It was garbage. It doesn't even count. And that was the other thing that made me mad. How dare you, Carl? You don't even know. You don't even drink. So anyway, the point of this is there were some discussions that I wanted to have that either were gumming up the works of the discussion we were trying to have or we just didn't have time for it. So I don't know, Bill, you listened to the final thing. I was trying to make a point that we're at a place where we should be like looking to accelerate. I think Jason Scott said something like, you know, in 5 or 6 years, Carl would be like the chair of the Democratic Party. Yeah. And I wanted to throw him off my roof.
Yeah.
So the point I was trying to make is that we're trying to do something actually quite different. Now, the point Carl was trying to make was that, you know, let's not count our chickens or whatever. You know, we only want a few things. And we can talk about some of the things that would indicate, you know, maybe a more moderate approach, not politics, but approach, like strategy. I mean, how much of it came out, and what do you think of the question?
Well, I think I just want to say first, like, it was great to hear Jason on the episode last week. I think I generally agree with him with the knowledge that he's, you know, he's got some years ahead of me, and he is maybe more of the Daily Kos pilled brain and can kind of lean into worst case scenarios a lot. Like, you know, he probably thinks that Donald Trump will be reelected. I think he thought for certain that Bethany would be elected in the primary.
Yeah, I think, and he said it in here.
And he said it in here, yeah. And he was like, yeah, I really took. But I mean, that was something that many people thought. I think that it was the, like Omara is running as the spoiler, and it's just simple math, folks. And it's like, but we have 7 very bad polls in this state that I don't think can ever be relied upon for anything good. Otherwise, you're just going off like social media vibes or
yeah. Speaking of that, because
your neighbors,
because there was, and I don't remember because I never looked at any of it, but I saw that it was out there, and I was getting texts like everybody else. Because there was some money pumped in for a couple of different reasons. And there was some polling done. Did any of that play itself out, or was it all just garbage? Do you remember? Carl, you probably know off the top of your head.
I mean, all the polls initially had Bethany up by quite a bit, and then as the initial stuff came out, she dropped a little bit. And then there was, I believe in July, there was a report that came out from the Department of Elections. They got FOIA'd out, I think, or something like that. And that basically said, like, yeah, she committed crimes, essentially. And that, from then on, basically every poll that came out, except for maybe one, I believe, had Matt up pretty substantially. So I think that it all seemed ballpark correct in terms of how it played out.
Okay. And I guess that makes sense, and that because that was what the fact that that all came out after insiders knew there was all of these problems before for like a year, then this big story comes out, and it's just like the last stake. So okay, some of it was fairly accurate. Fair enough. Sorry,
it did kind of remind me, just as an aside. Like, I think that I'll speak for myself, but I think both of us were kind of incorrect when Kathy McGinnis ran for auditor against Lydia, and we were like, this is going to be a dead heat. Like cat, like, and it's just, and it, she got ended up getting smoked, and I think I don't know what I'm trying to say there, and like compare her to the Bethany Matt gubernatorial primary, but it's just it just reminded me, like, I'm just out of the predictions game entirely, and I would hope that everyone else leans into that, or at least try it for a cycle. It does wonders for your mental health.
Yeah, I mean, I did not pay attention to any of that. Most of the races, we kind of like made jokes out of it. I certainly understood what the ramifications were, and I had, like, I had opinions about it. But, yeah, it was very nice for your mental health not to have to, like, get in it every day, because it doesn't really, there's no point. But that brings up a point that I wanted to ask Carl as well, because he mentioned, like, you know, the House race and knocking Val Longhurst out of the House, you know, those are small districts.
The upset of the night of the year.
Those are you know, small districts. It's a Democratic primary. Okay. But there's been indication over time that once you win that, you can get stuck in. And also what we've seen is a sort of a three-cycle surge in them. And all I can say is that if it looks like you can press on the gas, now's the time. Because I think there's a hunger for some new thing, something that like kind of breaks, one or two things that kind of break through this morass of like everybody always expects the same stuff. I think that's like the issue with Delaware Liberal too. They've been around so long, they just expect it to be like, oh, Ralph Moyad wrote it in the fucking paper in 1985, and that's how it is.
Well, also, like, look at any comment by Al Mazzetti, especially like until July 20th, or July 21st, when Biden did finally step down. They were just like, there is no way. It's not going to happen, folks. You can talk about it. He was kind of like talking to us like Bill Maher. And lo and behold, it did happen. And I imagine his worldview was kind of crushed as a result of it.
Yeah, I think it's like, I mean, obviously I've said this before and I think it's pretty obvious. It's like whatever the you know, conventional wisdom is in Delaware, whatever Celia Cohen would say, that's kind of what they're going to say is going to happen. Yeah. You know, I even said, like, you know, with Steve holding grudges and stuff, I think it's great, but it does get a little bit like, okay, I think we're moving on now. I think there's trends that we can look at that says we're moving on. So let's move on.
Well, we can lose the narrative that there's every high profile election will have a Christine O'Donnell in it, because like you'll see people say, make that comparison every time, like CO. I joked about this. CO equals Christine O'Donnell equals Colin O'Mara equals CO. He is, and that's what people were like seriously being like, Bethany has strung him along, is going to promise him a lucrative cabinet position. And it's like, maybe that is possible. Like, yeah, you know, maybe their life is a movie and like they're trying to pull a fast one on us. I tend to think that's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, like, they definitely
not every election has to replicate the most famous one of the last, whatever, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It has to fit. It has to fit a certain, like, that's the story. And there's you know.
Right.
And, I never saw that COCA.
Okay.
I don't know. This is the first time hearing
scribblings when I was awake at 3:30 feeding the baby.
That's actually pretty. Yeah, yeah. You're sleep deprived. Yes. You're like the guy in Dr. Strangelove just doodling.
Basically.
Those yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, and people are saying that if Bethany was victorious, then like, how can we run her against Mike Ramone? Some people, like registered Dems, were like, I would have to vote for Ramone under these circumstances, sir. Just like saluting the Delaware flag. And it's like, that's not very bright in my opinion.
Well, the other thing, I don't even go that far because I did hear about some friends of ours have a family in Kent and Sussex, I think. Sussex, actually. And who changed their registration to Democrat to vote for Colin as a spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay.
Okay. So like
who gives a shit? Like everybody, that was like making people nervous. I'm like, who yeah. cares? Like it doesn't matter.
All right. Yeah. Like 38 of you might do that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool, I guess. But
yeah,
you're allowed to do
like,
it.
Well, yeah. It's just like everything has to fit that. Bethany, she's like a machine. Everybody's known her for so long.
Yeah.
And it's just like people can't get out of that mindset. And I think we're going to have to like rip them out of that mindset.
Yeah.
Like how many more, you know, old heads that were still fighting at the end have to go before we say it's ours now and exert that pressure?
14.
Well, here's the problem. I'm going to bring this up now because I will say that the goalposts do move a little bit because it was like it had a lot to do with leadership, which is still an open issue. So we'll leave it there. But there is a certain kind of person, and I was going to do this as a closer, but we can do it now. Because there are other sort of ramifications to this. There are people who were, because they don't have a strong conviction, sort of hedging their bets. And there was a lot of them. And so I think those people need to be leaned on very hard. Because you can probably extract something out of them that you never could have gotten before. People you think never play ball. They might play ball now because they're only transactional. You know, hey, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you have a better feel for sort of what kind of how malleable somebody may be. But I mean, they're generally pretty transactional, and people there have to know that they're either in the crosshairs or they pick the losing side. So those two are just ripe for the picking. Am I wrong about that?
May I seek clarification here?
Yeah.
So is the group you're talking about, say hypothetically, more of the Chamber of Commerce inclined Democrats, or maybe folks who received like a WFP endorsement once?
Well, I would say the WFP endorsement once folks who are sellouts, basically. That's to some degree. Some are more sellout than others, and there's a small cadre of them. That's one thing because I think they made a choice, and they can see the writing on the wall that the wind's blowing the other way. So that's one cadre, but they're already there.
Mm-hmm.
But the Chamber of Commerce cop adjacent cadre, their numbers are dwindling. Like the Frank Cooks and the Mimis of the world, they got to know they're in the fucking crosshairs, right? I mean, they got a target there because they've done a wonderful job in figuring out where to go, how to go and speak to the people in certain areas and certain neighborhoods with certain messages. And people are hungry for something different. That's why it's working. And so the Mimis and the Franklin Cooks, they should be very, very worried. And so there's both of them. I think they're both there because ones are already there that, you know, are probably, they know they got found out. They're like, I see what you did. You sold out for nothing. Well, you know what? If you apologize, we'll bring you back. That's one.
Right.
The other ones, if they want to, unless they just want to retire, maybe Frank Cook just wants to retire. I know Mimi doesn't, you know, I don't know. So, you know, these are the conversations that I think the tough. We're going to have a come to Jesus with you, because here's the situation. Because we weren't really in the position. When I say we, like the movement left, people who want to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't in a position to have these conversations before. But now I think we are. That's what I'm saying. And this was sort of like what we couldn't get out of that, trying to sort of flesh this out a little bit. We never got to it. I mean, is it just a numbers game? That's it. That 14 is what? What is that? Numbers for the leadership.
The majority of the caucus.
So that's like a leadership
Democratic
vote.
Caucus. Yeah. I mean, I think. I mean, I'm not saying that we shouldn't try to do anything. Obviously, that's part of my job is to try to do things. But yeah, I think if we're saying that, like, oh, the culture is completely changed, or this or that is completely changed, and this is the point I was trying to make with, like Matt Meyer, because Matt Meyer being very much not the establishment candidate, like he didn't have, well, he had some legislative endorsements of the Inks. I know that Nnamdi endorsed him, and I think a couple other people might have as well. And obviously he had plenty of like established people, but it was not like he did not get it was the governor endorsed against him. All the House leadership voted against him or endorsed against him. Like a lot of people who are quote unquote establishment endorsed against him. But if you look at like how he got in, for example, like obviously it's a big culture change and it's a good thing and a positive thing that he won over Bethany. But, you know, if you look at the theory of change that he took to get there in terms of how he ran his campaign, like he ran on some progressive policies, but he also ran by raising as much money as humanly possible from all the corporate people and using that to just like drown the space with negative advertisements. Like that was the strategy and it worked. And that's, you know, if it accomplished something good, then that is what it is. And then we have seen this, I would argue it's a four cycle surge from 2018 to 2020 to 2022 and now to 2024 of
I missed that one.
Progressive primary victories. Obviously in 2018 it wasn't WFP and it wasn't even really, some of them were like Network Delaware Action people, I think, but you had some good people in that class as well. But yeah, I do think there has been somewhat of a culture change. I don't think it's been as drastic as it needs to be, and it needs to get more drastic. And then I think there's been a policy change as well, because you got $15 minimum wage. Well, we're finally getting it January 1st. We're finally getting 15. You got big time paid family medical leave. You get some version of tenants' right to representation. You get legalizing marijuana, even after Carney didn't want to do it. You get, you know, other things like that that you would never have gotten before 2018, especially, but even especially after, not before 2020. And so I think we need to keep pushing for more and better things like that. And I think we need to be pushing to keep changing the culture and make it even better. But I just don't think that these results specifically justify like, oh, before this it was bad and now it's good.
No, and I don't think that, because basically, and you corrected me, and you're right, that the trends actually go out a little bit longer, and they're not just electoral. They're a little bit legislative, because mm-hmm. some things did move forward.
Yeah.
So you're actually even lending more evidence to my idea that we've built up a lot of momentum.
Yes.
And I'm wondering whether, and maybe this is because I've been thinking about how to message this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think people will get more excited and we'll get more out of it. And we're in a place now to do this, to really take a broad universal program and push it.
Yeah.
Now, or expand on it. Like, we should have done universal lunch, breakfast and lunch for school kids last time.
Yeah, it should
we should
have
just
happened.
Do
and
that.
It didn't, because
we should expand it in
Val
some
Longhurst
fashion
and John
just,
Carney.
And
now
just
they're
do
both
it. But they're gone. So we should just do it.
Yep.
And say, this is what we did. See what we did?
We need universal
your kids
preschool
are,
meals.
All your
we
kids
need earned sick time and safety leave for all workers. We need to pass rent stabilization so that people can't just jack up the rents like they have been.
And I guess what I would like to see,
we need an actual repeal of Leobor.
Thank you. Can we move that one up a little bit? That would be nice.
I'm sure there's other stuff that I'm missing.
No,
other bills that passed last year, but like,
and
yeah,
I think the days of like the days of saying, well, if you introduce it and it gets a fiscal note, it's going to take about 3 years, or, you know, mm-hmm. you're going to have to put it in this committee. Like the days of that,
we need
kind of the days of that procedure. The
tax
brackets, perfect.
Yeah.
And the tax brackets pay for you know, something that we pick. Again, I think the days of using the leg haul as a mechanism for just being able to show up and maybe we'll do a third of what you want in 7 years. That has to end. And even with $15 minimum wage, even with cannabis legalization, even with paid family leave to some extent, it was massaged. It wasn't, you know, it didn't really get implemented, or you had to wait 4 years for it to get implemented, or it only applied to certain people. Like, all of that and waiting 2 years for it to happen, we have to get that and say that's history.
Yeah, our household.
We do stuff. We pick the stuff we want to do, and we do it.
Yeah, I think that's the goal.
Perfect.
I was gonna say our household received a very confusing letter about.
Oh, that's right. And I still didn't see what the answer. Did anybody get an answer on that?
No. On like this is on paid, like maybe buying a private insurance plan for your paid family medical leave from the state. I don't know. It was just very confusing. It was like, when is this starting again? I know that there's like a year, it takes a year to fund their like insurance trust fund, and then it goes into effect a year after that. But I don't know. I hope it happens soon.
Yeah, me too.
It's a great thing. But yeah, to go back and answer your original question, I never see Carl being like the figurehead of the Delaware Democratic Party. I think that maybe Jason meant more broadly, like, what if it were to continue becoming more progressive, and the party would evolve with that progression, which I don't see happening.
I guess, and maybe that was my sticking point, because yeah. Like you're going to say like
it's becoming more and more corporate.
It's work like each year. Like I mean, look who just the party. Look who runs the party. Who I mean, the leader of the party is really the doddering president, the doddering president, or Chris Coons or Carper. These old heads, the people who run the party are just like. Nepo hires who, you know, act like they act on Delaware Liberal, which is why they're getting their ass beat.
Or on the Wilmington Democratic City Committee.
The people who, right. And so I just say, just push that aside and just start operating the way you need to operate. And I'm not saying you don't have to be a Democrat or go to those meetings or use that, you know, use that, but we have to just operate like, oh, we're not doing that. Just forget it. Just ignore it, almost. Like, you can't... They're not gonna... They don't have the material sort of desire or need. Everything comes from what they are. Their whole idea of themselves. Betsy Marin, yeah. Or whatever her name is. Like, this is what they are. And that's over. So they're not going to come over to our side or evolve. They're just going to have to leave. And that's it.
Carl, you can cut this if this is dull, but I saw like a kind of a few Reddit type people in the wake of the primary being like, now would be a great time for Delaware to bring back fusion voting. And I was wondering.
Oh, no, I totally agree with that.
Are you seeding Reddit now with the fusion voting? Because I know you're a big fusion voting guy.
I am shocked because I rolled my eyes when you said some Reddit types.
Yeah. Well, because I guess, well,
who was that?
Ranked choice is also.
I mean, ranked choice, you can do both.
You can do both. Okay. I know they're different. I mean, they're different conceptually.
Yeah.
But so fusion voting was stopped by the legislature, I assume. Like,
yeah, back in 2010, it was Earl Jakes.
Oh.
After the Working Families Party back in 2008 had endorsed some Republicans that were pro labor.
Yeah.
The Democratic Party said, no, we can't have this. And Earl Jakes was the one who passed. The repeal for fusion voting. We had it all the way up to that point. And some states like New York is the most famous one, still has fusion voting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we absolutely should bring it back because it allows you to organize specific constituencies into parties that otherwise would not have a say and allow those constituencies to have real pressure on the legislators because we can say like, hey, if you are a Democrat who's also running on the working families line,
mm-hmm.
and we can organize around that, that means we can deliver however many working families votes.
I see.
And in a lot of cases, especially in like maybe some swing districts, that can often be the margin of victory in some close races.
Okay.
And that brings more accountability. And the other thing that it brings is the ability to work with candidates as an official party and not just as a third party. Like a separate organization, which
right.
allows the campaign finance laws change a lot in terms of how they can open up. So it allows, this is good for Democrats too, not just working families Democrats, of just allows more money to come into these races, more support to come into these races, especially in areas where it is really needed, say in like Kent or Sussex County.
Okay. And how about is this, so would fusion voting need to come back in order for this Wilmington City Council to knock the local
No,
Republican
so that
off?
That is just any third party.
Any third.
That meeting's actually just following this when we turn the microphones off.
That's a real true executive session.
That's a Spadola, same thing, bub. The other thing we didn't get a chance to talk about, because I think this reflects like sort of this idea that this old way of thinking almost seems quaint. Carl read the op-ed from the Delaware Business Times, reflecting on the thing, and it was so incredible. Funny. I mean, it was funny because we read the funny cop thing about radical scumbums, and that's just like some Facebook post. This guy in the Delaware Business Times basically wrote an op-ed, basically saying the same thing, and it was wild. But you listen to it, and that last line really stuck with me. And it was something like, the lobbyists are really going to have to rethink how things are done now in Dover because of this.
That was how he concluded it.
Something like that. Wasn't that the last line?
That's his audience.
I thought to myself, yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit?
Sucks
that's the whole point.
Them.
Yeah, like who do you, how, which, it shows that he's predisposed to think of it in a way that's completely backwards from how it really is. And that's the kind of thing that I think I want, like, we have to make it very clear somehow that the reason that you're confused is because you got it backwards. Like, we're going to throw all of them out. You know, we're not doing it like that anymore. There was actually, I mean, you had an interest because you are an editor at the Delaware Business Times or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're the kind of person that we're throwing out. That's an old way of thinking. That's like women can't vote. Everything's in black and white. You know, a husband and wife can't sleep in the same bed on TV. Like, that's over.
Right.
It seems weird now because you're like, oh, that's real quaint. How in movies you couldn't kiss or whatever. Yeah. So this is you're talking like that. That's your political ideas that you're putting out on the internet for everybody to read. Makes it sound like, you know, you're shocked that you can see a woman's ankle at the film strip. You know, or something like, you know, you paid your nickel and you just want to see some good entertainment, somebody in blackface, you know, something like that.
Yeah, it's it felt like it could have been written 20 years ago. Like, oh, this progressive voice continues
radical.
To get a little louder each year. Unfortunately, the funniest detail of that article was that he was like just awkwardly injected that he was on a cross-country flight when the election results were coming in. And I was like, what does this detail have to do about him flying to California? I was like, are you just bragging about this?
He was going to a tech conference. I don't know. I don't remember that part. Maybe Carl didn't read that part. I don't remember. It was obvious that, well, it's also very funny that, I mean, it's personally funny that all of these like campaign, you know, the candidates themselves, their campaign staff and volunteers, and their platforms are like radical. They're coming out of nowhere. They're going to kill us all. Like, they're not even radical, bro.
No.
Sit down with me. You might not walk out. You know, you might have to, if I say your name, stand up, say the party line, and follow that guy out the door. You know, there'll be a fucking purge of you, at least of your ideas. This is all satire, by the way. But that's exactly what I mean. Like, what are we going to? These people, they want to try to give kids lunch. Oh, my God, they're radical. They're trying to, you know, I love the people who, homelessness is, like, going to kill us all. Then we're like, well, we have some plans for that. That's radical socialism.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that I think it's fair to change, and I think this has already started to happen, and so I don't think it's going to be the biggest departure, but I think it's going to be a furthering of a trend that has also already started, which is, that the FOP lobbyists, the charter school lobbyists, the Chamber of Commerce lobbyists, the people who go down there representing a specific corporate or empowered interest, they're not just going to be able to like walk into the office of whoever they want and be like, okay, this is what we're doing. And everybody's just going to be like, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've already noticed that with some of the new folks, that like that isn't how it works anymore. And I think, you know, they're still allowed to be there. It's a free country, I guess. But you know, you can make your point and you can give your public testimony like everybody else does. But I think that is where we are headed and where we need to be headed, is that if you are like a small business owner, like, yeah, you should have your voice heard, but it should count just as much as all the other workers that are coming to give their voice as well, because that's what a democracy means. I think the ideal world for me is one where, yeah, economic privilege does not have any say in how much your voice is heard in government. I think if you are rich, you should have your voice heard. If you're poor, you should have your voice heard. And both of those should be taken fairly equally. Because that's, if we're talking about democracy, if we're talking about equality, fundamentally, that is what that means. And that is not how things have run so far. And is that radical in the context of how our government has been run? Yes. But I think if you walk down the street and talk to 10 people, at least 6 or 7 of them will be like, yeah, that makes sense.
I think you're, I forget what I said at the beginning about this sort of like hunger for that, because it sells. People see that it sells. You've sold it. It's flying off the shelves. And yeah, because of the trends we talked about, I feel like there's this, people are kind of ready for it. They don't even know that they know what it is, but if you give it to them, you like sell it again. See what we do. Yeah. Remember you were like, you thought it would be better, more fair if X, Y, or Z was happening. Well, guess what? We gave you X, Y, and Z. And then you think you had something to sell before. Ooh, that's luxury, you know. And again, I think it's a small group of entrenched people that don't understand like how it's going. Like every person in the community has just as much right to say something about the police as the police. But you know, I guess that's not how they want it to work.
Yeah. And why I'm still, I think, I've been the wet blanket, is that I know that all those people, they're a minority and they all live in legislative hall, basically, or they all live in county government, or they all live in city government. So there's still a lot of sludge that still has to be shoveled out, and there's still a lot of it there, and I think it's still going to keep things from getting done in the way that we think it should get done.
Are you talking about draining the swamp?
Yeah, whether leadership gets changed or not, which obviously it's going to be changed because Val's gone, but like depending on what happens with leadership, I think good or bad or neutral, like it's still going to, there's still going to be more work to be done. Lots of more work to be done.
Yeah, because we saw it, for example, in the corporate law changes. You know, there are still processes you're just not going to get into right now. But that's why I think, you know, you pick some of the universal sort of equity programs and social programs, whatever you can do, and just, you know, that's the best option, I think. Because, I mean, the same with the police. They're still going to be an absolute menace. I don't expect, like, all of a sudden there's things like that, like everything's going to change, because there's a lot of stuff in there that's like, it's locked in. It's going to take a lot to dislodge it. But I think the opportunity is there. The trends sort of indicate it, that we could go a lot for, we could, and I guess that was the I don't remember what word I used with Jason and Jordan, but it was like just an imagination. We can imagine something more. Like, yeah, we haven't really passed more than one big bill every 2 years or something. What we would call big bill. We should change the definition of that and ramp up the time. But people don't have, like, they don't dare to dream, you know, whatever. I mean, it sounds stupid to say it, but that's really what it is. It's a lack of imagination about what you could actually do.
Yeah, because we talked about, you know, some of the programs with, you know, earned sick time, rent stable. Like, I think earned sick time and free school meals are, like, kind of obvious things where this is just so clearly should happen. But I think, like, rent stabilization would be, like, a much bigger, that would be the biggest thing that has passed in as long as I've been working in politics. But I also think things like Inspector General could have just, like, this huge effect. Things like community workforce agreements, which we tried to pass in 2023. Like, Matt Meyer, if you want to show that you're not anti-labor, help pass community workforce agreements, which shows that, like, people who work on these state-funded construction projects and other state-funded projects are actually paid good wages. They have the opportunity to organize and be represented by unions. And also, it's local hire. It's diversity hire. It's, you're actually hiring people from the community to build up their own communities. There's things like that that are, like, between that, rent stabilization, you can actually really fundamentally change just like the distribution of where the government in Delaware stands, whether you're on the side of the workers and the communities, or if you're on the side of the developers or the police or whatever it is. And that's, you know, if Matt Meyer wants to show that he is, that's where he stands, then I think he can push for things like that.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, mine would be this, and he advocated for this on social media, was the tax bracket, the John Kowalko fairness tax. That's what we're calling it, obviously. But that's teed up. Like
bring back the estate tax.
If the governor, let's go. Like if the governor said it publicly that this is something they want to do, and we, you know, we're on this way. Let's do it. Let's do it now.
Bring a special fucking capital session. Capital gains tax just for Bitcoin.
Tires. Okay. Brake squeak.
It's record scratches. No, but that's what I mean too. Is there are some just very straightforward like new tax bracket for state income tax. This is what it is.
Yeah, and you don't have to spend all session on it. Either.
Done. That's 1 week. It's done. We've talked about it for fucking 10 years, maybe more.
What is the top one? It's over 60.
60.
You can even explain that to the Republicans, who are just going to be who listen to Sean Hannity 18 hours a day. Like you can just explain it to them and tell them this is how it's going to go.
Yeah, and that's it.
We have the numbers.
We've run the numbers. Yeah. And, I know you don't like it, and they'll be like, oh, you raised our taxes. Guess what? Tough shit. This is where we're at. We won. So let's do it. And I would say something like that would also, I think, energize a lot of the other things that are happening. Pick something that's right off the shelf. John Kowalko fairness tax. Let's fucking go. And then, maybe... you'll have some fucking credibility. Because I know that the one that Carl mentioned is controversial, because this is what his problem at the county. This is why all the
you mean my unrealized capital gains tax for Bitcoin?
No. God damn it. No, the community worker agreements or whatever they're called. I forget the technical name of it.
Yeah, community workforce. Yeah.
Workforce agreements, right.
Which we already have a version of that, but it doesn't cover nearly as much as the version that Representative Lambert introduced in 23. Already used in a lot of places, generally proven to be pretty effective.
And my other thing that I think is a real easy change, this will help sort of stuff kind of go our way. We've made cannabis legal. The cannabis czar is a dipshit. He's a cop. Fucking goofball. I know how you treated Zoe, by the way, if you're listening to this. I know how you treat them. I know you treat women. Just remember, I fucking know, Chief. What do they call him? Suds? He has a nickname. Buds or Suds. Clifford. He has a shortened nickname. They call him
This is Puck. The czar?
The weed czar. Oh. What the fuck is his name? Gus? I don't know. He has a fucking stupid nickname. Whatever it is. I fucking hate that guy. Corn pop.
Kamabla. We call him Kamabla.
Oh man. But I want to make you have legal. We opened the books. Your name's in there. You're
that's
a barred attorney.
I am on there.
You could be the cannabis czar.
Unfortunately, sometimes. This is anecdotal. This is because I think the broader topic I hear you guys talking about is sort of imagination and or creativity in governance. And being more forward-thinking and not reactionary. And so I don't know about you guys. I get a lot of Philly transit area stuff in my Twitter feed. And I have for years now. It's obviously heating up a lot now with the stadium location. And I saw a young lib today do a thread. And I guess there's been fare evasion issues in Philly, maybe with college students for the most part, kind of like NYC. New York City, again, it's a made-up crisis. People are probably losing their lives as a result of it.
They are. The one guy, I think, is in some sort of bad state that got shot for the turnstile jumping a week or two ago in New York.
I think it's a foolish thing to enforce, and I think I am someone who would advocate for transportation as a free public good, pretty much anywhere. And
Jordan Howell is fucking levitating.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah, and I don't think it should be controversial either. I think it's something that it really attacks the working poor in this country, and I think it's almost like their bosses have this mindset that they have to arrive here on time on their dime, you know, and I think that that sort of is built into that sort of small business tyrant mindset when they're working with their working poor employees. But that's an aside. I just wanted to get this out because the kid on Twitter or X, the Everything app, was saying that no, free public fare for SEPTA is a terrible idea. Here's, you know, six reasons why. But it, you know, his major one was that SEPTA is funded through toll revenue. We need to find ways to encourage revenue and not just eliminate it entirely. And people are being like, there are other ways that SEPTA could be subsisting, that we could be raising taxes in the ways that, you know, we were talking about 5 minutes ago, putting the onus not on, you know, this like budgetary balancing question, but hey, there are so many other ways we can get creative and get money in here to fund this crumbling resource.
Yeah, I mean, there's countries and cities where the state or city or whatever owns the land around the transit. So, you know, you own maybe like an acre or so each direction. And just built, they used to do this in like the 1860s, basically. They did it in a super corrupt way, but like the basic idea worked very well in terms of funding, which is you build the track.
Yeah.
You sell the land off on the sides, and then you tax that land. So you get two things of revenue. You get the initial upfront investment of you selling off the land, and then you get the, you know, I would prefer like something like a land value tax, but it could just be regular property taxes, where all this land, which is now much more valuable because it's right by transit, is getting taxed to fund the transit that it is benefiting from.
Right.
It's like how, stuff it's like how that. The West was won.
That is how, yeah, that's how we got the Union Pacific.
Some of those actually didn't pan out, some of those lines. We're like, we're going to put a line from here to here.
Yeah, the trick is
we're going to build a city every 20 miles.
Just enmesh it in just like an insane financial market that destroys the whole economy and try not to do genocide while doing it. Wow. So you can avoid those two things.
So, there's two asterisks. Yeah. We just want to put those two asterisks on it. Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point, and maybe tell me the moral after this. But
I was going to say, moral of the story is everyone clowned rightfully on John Carney's proposal to move the 76ers stadium to the Wilmington Riverfront. People are like, where will we park? That classic, classic Delaware catchphrase was, I don't even know if, like, are they saying it?
.com.
See, I can see it, them saying it to be funny two different ways, and I'm never really sure if they're doing it. Because I'm poking fun at myself for asking this dumbass question. But anyway, that's how you do. Like, you could have a stadium down there, but you'd have light rail. Someone else smarter than me would have to figure it out. You find a fucking big parking lot somewhere in Wilmington. You have a light rail station there, and then you take people to the urban.
Or what if we had a light rail, a couple lines of light rail that just went, you know, down busy, you know, down Pennsylvania Avenue in town, then out to the river, all the way out to Southbridge to the Sixers thing and back.
Yeah,
there's one. You just covered probably half the fucking city.
Yeah. Right.
If you've ever gone to a Nationals game in Washington from using
Navy Yard. Yeah. Gotta go Orange Line Navy Yard.
Yeah, it's the best thing in the world.
And yeah, like you could park, you know, 10 or 15 minutes away. Yeah,
somewhere else.
Take it in. It's like, this is how a lot of the country, a lot of the world operates.
Well, a lot of the world, maybe not.
Not a lot of the country. That's true. But yeah. Yeah, I don't know what the moral is. I think I've reached an age, I think I'm too old to have an opinion on the Philly transit YIMBY versus NIMBY thing. I remember being in Philly in my mid-20s.
And you were like, I'm in this.
With riding my bike. I remember, like, I would be all about there being a walkable stadium in the city. Now it doesn't really seem like a good idea. You know? Talk about doing...
I wonder why.
Yeah, talk about, clearing the air of Native Americans.
Well, I hate to bring everybody down, but I do want to mention something. As you said, since you guys kind of reminded me about genocides we've done, you know, and coup d'etats and fucking sticking our nose, or, you know, for the money, we'll get in there, we'll do some secret shit. Well, you know what? Patrice Lumumba, we'll throw him in some acid. That was cool. But, so Israel has stepped up its terrorism, basically. No, none the less than Leon Panetta, famous scumbum radical CIA director, said that Israel's doing terrorism. This is going to be one to watch, because I'm getting to the point where we're going to have to just put it out there, you know, arms embargo, and fight as long as it takes. I do see a lot of parallels between this and South Africa. I said it before. There's going to be, you know, they're going to be ostracized from the world community. There's the BDS is going to get even sort of more traction. But it's going to take a very, very long time because this is like the start of it. And it took, you know, when Mandela was in prison for 26 years. So keep all of that in your minds, because it's like we did a lot of work on it and interviewed a lot of people, a lot of different angles. And we were working with Delfer and Mike Abel and activists and all of that. That this is still going on. And as you know, if you follow this podcast, the main logistics hub here in Dover has been just funneling death machines over there at a prodigious rate. It's incredible.
Yeah, at least I don't think anyone in Dover is signing the bombs that we're sending over to be dropped on families, are we?
Who knows what we're doing? The fucking Dover police chief signing a fucking 5,000-pound bomb they're going to drop on a hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is steel yourself to the fact that they're going to blow people up in cars and supermarkets. I mean, this is just old school terrorism. You know, they're going to basically just bulldoze hospitals and schools. It's not going to be good, you know. But we're going to win this. There's no other fucking choice.
Yeah, and hey, it's election season. I don't think that there's anything wrong with asking, you know, candidates, incumbents, whomever, what's their take on what's going on in Gaza right now. Maybe they've been told that they can, you know, their opinion doesn't really matter. They're a state level or they're a municipal level, you know, official. And what would they be able to do? But I think for folks who want to be pillars of their community or leaders and, you know, among their neighbors, they need to be on the record what their perspective is here. And they need to be able to talk honestly with their constituents about it and not just say, oh, isn't it so complicated?
Yeah. I mean, somebody once said it's actually not complicated. I won an award for that. Award winning. It's here somewhere. It's in that pile of papers back there, I think. But yeah, it's not complicated. It's been about 100-year project, maybe 125-year project. You know, because of the horrors of World War II, it had a sort of a turning point. It was sort of focused, and they're doing the genocide. You know, the West Bank. Just talking to people who have been there just makes me sick. And I think Bill's right, man. I think people like it's so sick that like I know that it's not maybe politically expedient, like you said, like, oh, I'm just a state official from here. But like at this point, if you're in government, you should have an opinion and you should tell me what it is. Because I need to know whether you think this is complicated, because it's not. I can tell you. I mean, if you don't know, if you just think it's complicated, and you don't understand, I'd be happy to. I could probably explain it to you in 30 minutes. I'd give you some citations, some books to read. So we could solve that problem if you don't know enough. If you think it's, you know, it's over your head, let me know. And then once you come back, if you think the status quo is good enough and you don't think that people arguing for an arms embargo, a full fucking embargo from this country to there is out of line, then you're out of line. Fucking Coop. The guy's name's Coop, the weed guy. It's like, I don't know if his last name's Cooper or what, but it's coming to start calling him Poop.
That's a little corny to me.
It's so fucking dumb.
I say this with peace and love. Similarly, whenever like a civilian or like just a fan, and I'm spelling fan, P-H-A-N.
Red October, folks.
Calls, Red October, baby. Calls their manager Topper, I'm always like, that is so corny, you guys.
Who does that?
Just like people are like, man, Topper, you should have pulled.
They do that now? I never heard that one.
Yeah, it's like.
Is that new?
Like,
that must be kind of new. Because he's called Skipper or the boss. Nah, sometimes they call him the boss. Like in England, they might say the gaffer.
Topper. Well, Topper is just his nickname.
It's his nickname. Apparently, it originated when he was with the Yankees, and he was like because he was always on top of the ball or some.
Oh,
bullshit.
So it's just his.
It's a Joe
nickname.
Torre nickname.
It's just his nickname.
Yeah, but it's just funny when I see people like in tweets being like, "Man, Topper should have not known to pool Alvarado when he didn't or something." I don't know. Like it's like
he should have pinch run for Boehm in the ninth. Yeah. Whatever. I don't. You know. Whatever. Yeah. That, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Why'd you play Taiwan Walker?
Yeah, period.
Come on, Topper.
I feel bad for that guy.
Oh, man. That's funny. Yeah, Red October, that'll be a hoot. Speaking of, I want to thank everybody specifically who helped out and volunteered for the Delaware Call Fall Classic because it was super dope. The Working Nine, the challenge team, actually prevailed. They beat the established Diamond State Club 11-9 in nine innings. The Delaware State Club did score like three runs in the bottom of the ninth and made a little bit. Everybody got a little nervous. I was nervous, but it was all in all a super day. Kirsten, Andrew, Bill Fasano, Jordan Pusey, thank you for all your work because you made it run very, very smoothly. And yeah, we had a cool time. So as Greg said, thank you, Greg, for all you do on the bar. You know, we do a lot of work to plan it, and when we're driving there in the morning, the day of, we're like, we're never going to do this again. And then as soon as it ends, we're like, oh, we got to start planning it again because it's dope. Bill and Carl were out. Our friend Matt Meyer came out and threw out the first pitch, as I think Jason sort of alluded to online. So yeah, it was a cool time. So thanks everybody for doing that and. And we're going to be doing more stuff at the call here at the end of the year. I have a couple of ideas. I think that's when we might blow up the Newcastle County Police Accountability Board in the call. I have an idea. I'm just going to put somebody on it.
Like metaphor.
What did I say?
Blow up?
Yeah, in a metaphoric way.
Yeah, we're not actually going to.
I've been joking about.
Thank you.
Attack the building.
No, yes. 15 blow up vans like blow chemicals. It up in from.
Blow
that's
it,
why
like
I said.
Like,
I said the
put
couple
more times, emphasis on.
Yeah, in the media, make yeah. more yeah. more. Thank you for
make
saying
it
that.
Pop.
Yeah.
We're not
yeah.
doing Fight Club.
No. That's no. We would never. I mean, we would never do that.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
The
can
FOP
you cancel
bar.
That U-Haul rental? This is all fucking satire. Come on. Well, thank you for hearing me out on this. I think I feel better now about the direction of everything. I was just worried. I saw like an older Carl, maybe with like a salt and pepper beard, standing on a dais in Georgetown. And here's all the carriages going by on return day. Carl just says Democratic chair, has a big sash, you know. And I'm just like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah, I'm going to make it so they actually have to bury the hatchet again. They stopped doing that.
I mean,
they just ride in the carriages now.
I can bury the hatchet.
Get drunk on Malort and fucking puke on the way back
out. I'll bury the hatchet somewhere. Well, they couldn't do it because of the coaches came from the Confederate Museum, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of people still went anyways.
That's what a surprise. If you want to hear sort of like an outsider's expert opinion, because he's not from here, he's from New England, but he's a historian, he's an American historian of American history. Ask Dale Norwood what he thinks about Return Day sometime. It's very funny. All right, friends, we'll speak to you next time.